Yo, what's shaking? Shaking, it's your boy State Man, State of New York Knicks podcast. Shout outs to my guy, OBXB. I rather hustle for this nice Dapper Dan hat. Everybody want to be like Harlem. Appreciate you. As you can see, got on the State merch. Shout outs to Dragon Ball Z, the creator passed away. Appreciate you, brother. A lot of childhood memories. With that guy, man. A lot of childhood memories, man. A lot of childhood memories. He's gonna be missed. I appreciate you guys who showed up in the chat early. He's gonna be missed. Today is a special episode for me. And obviously, I'm in the liquor store right now. But today is a special episode for me. And appreciate you guys who showed up in the chat early. Today, we have a guy on my show, and first of all, today's gonna be it's gonna be double time. So I got this show, then right after, I got my guy Anthony MSG pulling up too. With that said, this guy I've been watching since 2017. I seen the maturation in his podcast, one of my inspirations, one of the reasons why I do what I do. He's been on SNY. This guy got his own team, his own platform, his own section of the Knicks fan base that loves him. I don't think I've ever had this guy on my show. I don't think I've ever had him on a pod. I don't even think I ever had him on audio. I don't think it's never happened. That's my fault. That's my fault. I didn't mean to. My bad. I didn't mean to. That's my fault. So with that said, I want to bring my guy Jay Ellis in the building.
Yeah, what's good? What's good? I appreciate you taking accountability, State. I appreciate
Yeah, it was my fault. It's never your fault. I promise you that. It's always my fault. It's never your fault, man.
All
Shout out
good.
to you.
All good. All good.
How was your day? Typical Saturday. And how's the weather treating you? How's your family? How's everything outside of the New York Knicks, man? How's your mentals? How's everything going on for you?
Man, I ain't gonna lie. It's been a crazy year. I'm just trying to hold stuff together. I be escaping with my pod man the Knicks sometimes. But it's been challenging, man. I don't like to talk about all the challenges I endure all year, but I've made like a huge switch from moving to Brooklyn to Jersey. I'm doing a lot of things I've never done before, like getting out of the house and learning like 3D and learning a bunch of stuff. I'm doing a bunch of new things that I've never done before. I'm always busy. I'm always busy.
Not
So,
same, same. Even on my off days, I got stuff to do. Like I always got to do something. If it's not merch, writing, helping out in my family store. Shouts to Fred Wines and Liquor in
nice.
Harlem, helping out over here. It's just so much to do. It's not a lot of time to sleep. So I will heartily like vibe with you with that. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Jay, so I wanted to start off today before we even actually get to the next part, right? Well, yeah, let's get to the next part. How did you become a Knicks fan?
How did I become a Knicks fan? I don't even know when to pinpoint it exactly. Like, to be honest with you, like I just remember being in New York, being in Brooklyn. I remember my cousins being into sports. So I feel like it's a combination of like a way of bonding with my fam because they were into basketball a lot. So I started to watch basketball then. And then I remember really just watching the Knicks all the time at my pop's house and my grandmother's house. And I remember, I think my pops even noticed, and he took me to watch the Knicks game when I was like around 10 or so, when Ewing and those guys were still playing. And I feel like that was like a solidified memory for me. But I can't necessarily even pinpoint exactly when it happened. I just knew that I was a big outside guy. Like I like to play ball every single day when I was a kid, like for 10, 12 hours straight. And then I would watch the Knicks. So I don't know exactly when it happened. I just know it happened around that time.
Yo, it's crazy because I feel like I just say 20 years, bro. 20 years, because you don't know. Like, a lot of us really don't know. It's just in your blood. Like, you've always been a Knicks fan, how I feel. Like, I try to not judge nobody no more when it comes to the Knicks fandom or how they became a Knicks fan. I just want everybody to be a part of the family, me personally. So, with that said, you're a Knicks fan, diehard Knicks fan. What was the idea behind your show? Because you was one of my inspirations behind what I do actually right now. It's like a group of y'all that I looked up to. You was one of them. What was the idea behind your show, the thought process behind the name, and like, how did it start?
It was like a multi-tiered thing. Like, one inspiration, ironically, was Anthony MSG, who you're about to have on. I used to listen to, that was like my introduction to like Knicks podcast. And I used to listen to him, and then he like went black for a minute, where he didn't put out anything. And I was like, yo, where do you find more Knicks stuff? And I was looking, I couldn't really find it. So then I was like, you know what, if you can't find it, build your own. So that's one thing. The second thing was my pops was an inspiration for me as well. Like, watching him work, and when he worked, it's funny, like, not a lot of people know, but like, he lost his job like when he was in his 50s or whatever, and it was like a wake up call for me about like doing what you love and trying to build on something that you love, and that was an inspiration for me as well, and just me knowing that I love the Knicks and that I would routinely wake up every single morning and go on Pro Sports Daily and then look at the Knicks news and just be on the forums every single, before I brushed my teeth, before I went in the shower, before I ate, every single morning, I was on Pro Sports Daily looking at everything that happened to do with the Knicks. And I would just talk Knicks with anybody who would listen to me. So then when I was deciding, like, what should I do? It was like, oh, wait a minute, you're already obsessed with this, so you might as well just go that route. Like, my boy used to call me Black Woj because he'd be like, try to tell me anything about the Knicks. And I'm like, I don't know if that happened 3 days ago. Why you tell me late stuff for? Like, let me be the one to tell you, because you be late on the news. So,
yo,
it was accumulation of all those things that got me into it.
Yo, that's great, man. Shout out to my guy Cal from 118th and 5th. Shout out to Fifth World. My guy Cal, you know, watching guys like you years ago, like 7-8 years ago, Jesus Christ, like time flies. Watching guys like you, me and my guy Cal, we was like, all right, let's start a podcast. Like, Cal gave me the idea. He threw it to me, like, yo, let's start a podcast. I'm like, all right, babe, y'all take it. So we did one together. We did a podcast together on Anchor app. Anchor FM or whatever, and yeah, I just kept going, bro. I just kept recording because I love talking about sports, and I felt like I needed an outlet. You know, a lot of it was around the time like I first moved by myself in my own apartment, and I'm living by myself. I'm like, I need some type of outlet. Like, I need something, and then I was like, all right, cool. Me and Cal doing this podcast. He stopped doing it. I just kept going, and then like, here I am today. But it was also people like you, people like Macri, people like Sim, people like CP, like all of you guys. Like, I look up to all of you guys when it comes to this. Even like when writing articles, I seen you was writing, like, yeah, I was writing articles years ago. I just started on Substack.
Ryan G, yeah, shout out to Ryan G.
Shout out to Ryan G, that's my guy. And like, stuff like that is very important. You know what I'm saying? Just watching others and try to perfect your craft, but listening to people too, man. I was going on YouTube and I'm like, all right, who thinks like me when it comes to the Knicks? I know it's somebody.
Right.
So come across everybody's podcast. I'm like, all right, cool. And then I was doing podcasts. So I'm listening to y'all. I'm doing a podcast. I'm just learning. And then I got to this point right now. So, yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
It's fun. It's really fun. It is fun.
Do you call it a stress reliever or like therapy?
It's funny. At this point, it's both. It's like a stress and a stress reliever at the same time. Like, I don't know how to like explain it. It's because like I put so much into it, like getting a mic and booking guests and and I know like the way you do the post games was like after every game, so I try to be consistent with that. So like there's a stress of trying to be consistent and being in people's face and let it snow me here and trying to be different and grow the brand and all that stuff. There's a stress in that, but then there's a stress reliever in like when you link up with the people who you like to talk next with and you're talking and shooting the shit and whatever and you're having laughs and stuff. So it's weird. It's weirdly both.
It's a weird dynamic, man. What is your best advice to anybody who will want to start a Knicks podcast or do any type of content when it comes to the New York Knicks?
Oh man, my best advice. One, you gotta love it. You just gotta love it. Like you said, you started with your boy. And you fell off. Like, shout out to my peoples, because it was four of us, me, Ryan G, Kathy, Edson, Sean. We all started together. That's the original OG KOT. I'll never forget those guys. I would love those guys. Like, actually, I would like to do another podcast with them. I had so much fun with them. But it's like, one, to be in it, you gotta love it. You gotta love it. Those are ones who really sustain. Because there's gonna be ebbs and flows of how things go sometime. Two, you gotta be consistent to me. Three, you gotta just be yourself and have your own kind of angle and just kind of hone in on that.
Motion.
And then just keep learning. Like, you just got to keep learning too, because things are so different from when I started 7 years ago to now, like completely different. So like even me, I'm like, oh wow, I did this for a while. Now this new thing is happening. There's AI. There's so it's like the ability to try to grow with what's happening too is going to be helpful. Like even with the spaces, like I was like, yo, we need to get into spaces, But I'm doing so much. I'm only one person. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
yo, spaces. I'm gonna try to get you on now. I know it's tough. It's a different beast, man.
It's different. Like, and shout out to Ebony. Like even her, even them. Like, she does her spaces. I be getting home mad late, and I'll be trying to peek in, like, the very end when I'm not actually getting home, because I be on the train and traveling, so it'll be a lot. So by the time I actually get to enjoy the spaces, it'd be time to do another show. You know what I'm saying? So it's been really hard for me to, like, get into that. But yeah, like, it's ever-changing, so you just got to try to get that.
Yeah, man. Yo, shout outs to everybody who's in the chat. Shout outs to my guy, Knicks Jet, man. Jay Ellis is a legend. Absolutely. Shout outs to my guy, Jet again. State is a legend. Absolutely. I appreciate you, my guy. Shannon Ferguson, I had to support my guy and his state. I appreciate you, my guy. Stan with the flowers. Appreciate you, my guy. Stan, shout outs to Knicks Spaces. My guy, Killer. DBZ creator was a Knicks fan. I don't care what anybody say. Goku reps orange and blue.
Man, rest in peace, Akira, bro. Like, damn, son.
Rest in peace, man. That was tough. That was tough. You watch anime?
Dog, I wanted to be. So I'm an artist first. Like, I went to LaGuardia High School of Music and Art. Went to School of Visual Arts. I wanted to put out the first black anime, dog. Like, that's how much and Dragon Ball Z was my like gateway into anime. Now I'm not into it like I used to be. I used to be crazy into it. Now my sister, she's surpassed me. My sister is like an anime head now, like even more than I am. But I'm definitely into anime.
One last question about anime. Where would you rank Dragon Ball Z in your top animes all time?
That's rough. You know why? It's because it's like, it's almost like the LeBron versus, Jordan debate, or even the Kobe versus Jordan debate, because you have like a template where things start from, and then you progress and people improve on the template. So like, how do you compare everything new to like the template, you know what I'm saying? But yeah. Like, so like from Dragon Ball, like Naruto is like a spawn of Dragon Ball Z. And you like gotta because it takes that format of you growing with the character from very old to very young. But you got to put, I guess, top three. I don't know. Top four. It was the template for a lot of things.
Naruto not in my top five. I can't put it in my top five. I'm so sorry. Dragon Ball Z is there. It's one of my favorite shows. I think the director, I don't think he understands the effect that he had on like the black community or minorities growing up in projects. You know, you growing up and you watching Dragon Ball Z, that make you want to draw. You like 10, 11 years old. You want to do the Kamehameha. You got to go in the house to watch Dragon Ball Z instead of being outside and something probably happened to you. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, man. Yo, shout out to the DBZ. Jay, my next question to you. So where do you want to begin? So as many ways we could, I wanted to start with the 2019 season. But I want to go back to when we hired Phil Jackson.
That's when I started the podcast. Okay.
I wanted to go back to Phil Jackson. So when Phil Jackson first got here and, you know, he tried to trade Carmelo Anthony publicly like an idiot. He promised the Knicks a rebuild. He promised the Knicks we won't trade our first round picks. He promised the Knicks like they're going to build the proper way. What we didn't know was he was going to do nonsense and just, you know. So 2017, we draft Frank Ntilikina.
Yeah.
Right. You draft him over Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
In 2017, where did you feel like the Knicks' direction was going at that moment in time?
At that moment, I was hopeful because we were – Phil did a lot of things wrong, you know, but at least it was the start of a turn for the Knicks, you know, because that's the start of we're not trading our picks for old washed up veterans. And that got us to the point of where we at now, where we just have like an abundance of like 11 picks in the next 7 years. So that was Phil Jackson being here was the start of it. Now he messed up and I was hopeful that he was going to turn it around for us. And I thought that, you know, you remember the whole "when Phil we trust" thing, he was like, "in Phil we trust," but I was hopeful he's going to turn around and at least be like a contending playoff team for years to come and build up to a championship level team, but it just didn't happen. The Joakim Noah signing was horrible. The public crucifixion of Carmelo Anthony was horrible. The fact that he just talked so much. He's the opposite of Leon Rose. Leon Rose doesn't say anything. I think Leon Rose doesn't say anything today to the media is because of how Phil Jackson was at that time. Phil Jackson talked way too much. Like, you can't try to trade a guy and then go to the podium and go, "Hey, I don't like this guy. I want to trade him." You're literally lowering his trade value on screen. So I was hopeful at the start. I thought we was going to like make some progress to be like a playoff team. But in the end, he talked too much. He just talked too much, made some bad signings, and he made some good moves that put us on the right track, but ultimately he wasn't going to be the guy who was going to get us over the hump.
So I'm not going to lie. I said Frank Ntilikina was going to be the next Kawhi.
I was hopeful, man. I was part of the Frank hype back in the day, man. I was hopeful.
I said so many egregious things back in 2017, but that was me being hopeful because I would just believe in what he believed in. So when I look at the Knicks today, and we're going to get to the Knicks today in a few, they don't trade their first round picks, right? Leon Rose is steady, right? Leon Rose was also CAA, and he was the head of CAA at the time. CAA used to run the Knicks at that time, too. Phil Jackson wanted to run CAA out of Madison Square Garden. they had smoke. They had legit smoke for each other. Right. And that's why, like, the whole Melo situation, who's Melo agent? Leon Rose.
Right.
So you get what I'm saying? But you can see how Leon Rose took that whole, oh, we're not going to trade first round picks and this, that, and the third, and say, we're not gonna do that no more. So, you know, 2018.
2018.
We draft Kevin Knox.
Oh my God. I hated that draft, by the way. I was trying to be hopeful there too, but I hated that move. But go ahead.
Okay. 2018, we get Kevin Knox. Was your man Scott Perry in the building by this time?
Yeah.
So shout outs to Scott Perry. Shout outs to Steve Mills. Scott Perry basically got Steve Mills up out of there a year later. But Scott Perry had a plan. He was trying to build a functional team back in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
You like the idea of him getting Kevin Knox, right? But when you got SGA, he averaging 30. You got to take that F. But you know why Leon Rose is such a smart guy? Because now we got Jalen Brunson, so I don't have to worry about SGA. We're going to get to that, though. But 2018, tell me how you was feeling at the end of that season. Like we was messed up. You're looking at the roster. You're like, what the hell is going on? How do you feel in 2018?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. My memory is shot. It's not as good as yours. So, like, when you just say 2018, you got to leave me breadcrumbs of what was happening. So, 2018, I remember Kevin Knox was there. Was Fizdale there yet? I'm not even sure if Fizdale was there yet. Was
Absolutely.
Fizdale was there. This is the Wakanda year.
Yes, Fizdale was playing Kevin Knox so many goddamn minutes, and then fans was like, okay, Kevin Knox sucks, and you know, this, that.
Yeah. I'm a Scott Perry guy. I love me some Scott Perry. I hated the Kevin Knox signing. Hated it. I thought he was lazy. I thought he didn't try hard enough. I thought, why would you get a look? I generally, my philosophy when it comes to Knicks players is I do not believe in low motor guys long term. I don't care what their wingspan is.
Okay.
How much they jump. I believe when you're a low motor guy, that's something that's in you that's hard to get out of you. So I didn't like the fact that we started off that season drafting a low motor guy. So that's one.
Motion. So detector. We go into the very next season, 2019-2020 season, and get RJ Barrett, get Julius Randle, you know, Mike Miller, David Fizdale, Leon Rose, the whole Scott Perry, Steve Mills is out of here. Now you're starting to see a shift. Right? Got him up out of it. When Scott Perry and Steve Mills did that whole, when we started off the season 2-10, and they did the whole nonsense with the interview, what was your mindset at that moment in time?
Everybody about to be fired. That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, we suck. Everybody's about to be fired. We about to clean house. I know you a Steve Mills guy, but I'm remembering doing the show at that time, and I remember doing research, and Ryan G had an epic rant about Steve Mills and the Knicks losing record every time Steve Mills was there. And it's like every time we had like a long losing stretch, it had to do with Steve Mills. At that point, I felt like I was starting to get shaky on Fizdale and his lack of coaching. And I was shaking on Steve Mills because at the time there was a trade rumor happening where they wanted, was that the Marcus Morris year?
Absolutely.
That was the year when
that was the year we started 4-18. And then Mike Miller, I hate Mike Miller guts.
Mike Miller is better than Fizdale. No, sure.
He is trash.
Fizdale. I understand Mike Miller had the no shooting team squad, but he at least knew some X's and O's. That's a whole nother story. I didn't like that. I felt like Steve Mills was trying to keep Marcus Morris, and Scott Perry was trying to trade him for a pick, which really later became Emmanuel Quickly. I felt like that was a big reason why Steve Mills was let go, because of the difference of philosophy. I trusted Scott Perry more than Steve Mills in general, because I saw what he did in Utah and Detroit. And when Steve Mills was in New York, like, his track record didn't coincide with winning. So I felt like we need to move on from Steve Mills and we need to move on from Fizdale. That's the way I was feeling that season.
So now we're in the COVID season. My most hated Knicks season of all time. Basketball, fake everything. The refs was fake. The coaching was fake. The offensive calls was fake. Everything was fake. Everybody was making their jump shots. It was just fake basketball with no fans in the stands. One of the fakest seasons I've ever seen. The man Julius Randle played like the white. He played like Larry Bird.
He was crazy.
He was going crazy. Tom Thibodeau. First year here. He gets to the playoffs during the COVID season. Now, what is your mindset when you look at the Knicks, when you get to the playoffs? We get punched out of the first round by the Atlanta Hawks. We're going to serve them again soon. But you see what Tibbs is working with this roster. I'm looking at this roster right now, Jalen. Reggie Bullock, Alec Burks, Taj Gibson, Jared Harper, Kevin Knox, Nerlens Noel, Frank Ntilikina, Alfred Payton, Norval Powell, Theo Pinson, Emmanuel Quickly, Julius Randle, Austin Rivers, middle of the season, whatever. Mitchell Robinson, Derrick Rose, Dennis Smith Jr., Obi Toppin.
Yeah. I remember I got killed last year for saying last year's team was better than the four seed team, and I got killed until it happened. I got killed. And now when you read that lineup, you realize how ridiculous I wasn't when I said that last season. Because that season, like, we did not have good players. And you know what, too? This was my when I get into, like, debates with people who are Knicks fans, I always go, okay, is it the players or is it the coach or the players or both? Like, sometimes it's a ceiling of where you can go depending on what the players you have on your squad. And I feel like there'd be an over-reliance on the coaching sometimes. I'm just like, yo, you cannot make filet mignon with Hamburger Helper. And I felt like we had Hamburger Helper, and people was expecting the coach to be Jesus and pull out a miracle and be like, look, we got filet mignon here. Like, dude, you can't, like, we didn't have the right pieces. We did not have the right ingredients to get where we had to go. It was the start of something, though. We had Julius Randle was raw. That was the first time he was like, okay, we can see him take a step and be a guy we can possibly rely on. We saw some flashes from Emmanuel Quickly that year. We even saw some flashes from Obi Toppin that year that we had some hope for. But ultimately, we just did not have enough. Alfred Payton wasn't enough. Alec Burks at that time was better. It wasn't enough. We just didn't have the right team at that time. And it was good for one thing. It was good for establishing that, okay, this coach can make something out of nothing. And it was good to establish that Julius Randle might be better than we thought he was.
Who's better, Alfred Payton or Jerome James?
Yo, you crazy. I'm going to say Alfred Payton.
Okay. Jerome James better than Alfred Payton. Alfred Payton is one of the worst NBA players I've ever seen in my life.
Jerome James had a good playoffs. Alfred Payton at least had decent seasons. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I never seen nothing like Jerome James.
Jerome James was horrible.
He was horrible.
Isaiah Thomas overpaid him for one good playoff season. And that was probably one of the worst signings in Knicks history, competing with Antonio McDice and Andre Bargnani. It's up there. It's up there.
Where do you put Joakim Noah in that group?
In that group of worst signings? Pretty bad, but still not as bad as McDice, who never even made it to the season. and Jerome James got signed off of a playoff. He might be like battling between third and fourth. He might be somewhere around there.
Yo, shout out to Still Knicks fans. What's good, Knicks family? Salute to the chat. Salute JLS. Salute.
Stay my brother Ron.
Yo, salute. Bobby Porter, shout out to the Jet man. Bobby Portis and Marcus Morris. Also, Marcus Morris actually led to Emmanuel Quickly, which actually led us to OG Anunoby, who we wanted to soon. So shout out
to thank you, Scott Perry.
shout out Scott Perry. Shout out Scott Perry, man, for real. Scott Perry got Steve Mills out of here. Left the Knicks. I don't know who hired Leon Rose. I guess, you know, James Dolan, he hired Leon Rose. Got Leon Rose in here. Leon Rose gave him the gracious, right? Took his opinions. And now Scott Perry, even though he's not with the Knicks now, I feel like he's once a Knick, always a Knick. I feel like he's one of the reasons that we're here today.
That's a fact.
With this roster that we had, man. Steve Mills was trash. Shout out to you, Cap. Steve Mills, without Steve Mills, you would have all your first round picks right now, brother. He wanted to trade RJ for Drummond. Absolutely. Nobody not going bat 100, bro. Nobody going bat 100, bro. So after the COVID season, we get Evan Fournier and Bronx very own Kemba Walker. Yo, the Kemba Walker signing, that shit hurt, man.
That hurt, man. That hurt more than anything.
That shit hurt, man. And it hurt because I remember watching Kemba Walker, and then I'll let you get into the season. I remember watching Kemba Walker in Milbank. Milbank is a place that's on 118th and 5th Avenue. You walk in the middle of the block, Milbank. And Kemba Walker and guys like Corey Fisher and all these guys who from New York, they used to go over there and play in Milbank and play in these little tournaments, man. So shout out to Kemba Walker, Rice High School alumni. Rice High School, I believe it was torn down a couple of years ago. But Jay, man, the 2022 season, Evan Fournier, this debacle, Julius Randle completely wets the bed. Oh my God, he wets the bed the whole season.
Yeah.
Tibbs with this Alec Burke robbery.
That was the year I was screaming fire. That was the year I was with y'all at the fire Tibbs thing. That was the year I was with y'all. That was the year I was with y'all.
Oh, man, talk to me about that season, man. How you feeling about that season? That was just a little bit of the stuff that we was going through. But
yeah, that was. First of all, it hurt. That year hurt a lot because Kemba Walker is the New York Bronx guy. So it meant a lot to have him return to New York and hopefully be the guy who would take us over the top. I saw that move as a shrewd move. We got a guy who was an all-star, who was coming on the cheap, who can possibly lead our guy. He can shoot threes. Yeah, he can produce offense unlike Elfrid Payton. He was really good in the pick and roll, pick and pop situation. And I thought, hey, even if we have like 70% Kemba, we should be good. And boy, was I wrong. And so was everybody else. And he just did not have enough in the tank. So it was really hard watching the Knicks and Kemba Walker that season. Just because we were bad, and two, he's like a New York homegrown guy. And so it's like a double hurt watching that experiment totally fail. And that was also that was dumb down year. That was dumbs down year, right?
Yo, that year, Randle thumbs down. Randle with the shut the fuck up to the
face.
Randle with the you go to post game, you just scored 30, you go to post game. Very next game, you go 1-for-9. You don't go to the post game. Come on, now you're being a sucker. Now you're being RJ Barrett, my young boy, who we traded. And we're going to talk about that. He had to carry the load that whole season. Like, and it was all on him. And then the whole point guard fiasco and Tibbs with the.
Yeah, that was the year where I was screaming fire Tibbs for multiple reasons. And one of it was the lack of accountability, I thought. Because, you know, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. And I felt like Julius Randle at that time. I feel like he had a lot of talent, but he wasn't putting forth the effort all the time. And I thought Tibbs should have sat him down a long for more for and played Obi more that season. And even though Obi wasn't perfect defensively, I felt like at least he was giving the effort. And Julius Randle routinely wouldn't warn him back on defense. And he wouldn't put off the full effort. He had the numbers, but that was the year when it was like when I was looking at empty stats. And not only that was the year when it seemed like the season was lost. Alec Burks was playing over Emmanuel quickly, and he claimed it was because Alec Burks was a taller guard who can guard other guards, and he always got smoked playing defense against smaller guards. And I thought even then Emmanuel quickly was a better defender for smaller guards than Alec Burks was, but he just didn't see it, and he didn't lean into it early enough for me. So that was the year when I was on the fire tips train, because I felt like he was being too template-y in his rotations, and he wasn't experimenting, and he wasn't holding stars accountable like I felt he should. He turned it around, so I'm off that now, but that was the year it was bleak. And even Randle, yo, I was genuinely concerned about Randle that season, because I still remember him doing post games, and he looked into the camera and would talk, and his eyes were dead. Like there was nobody home.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, yo, I think homie is depressed. Like, I don't know what's happening in his personal life, but it looks like he's genuinely depressed and checked out. And I wonder if the coach knew something that we didn't know, and that's why he kept playing him out of like sympathy, because it just looked like he didn't even want to be there. And I'm glad he's smiling, turning it around now, but it was a different time.
Yo, it was tough watching Randle that year, bro. I'm not going to lie to you, bro. Yo, I ain't going to lie. I forgot when. I think it was that season. Yo, Randle made me so mad one game. I added his wife on Twitter. Shout out to his Kendra Randle. Love his family to death. Love the Randle family. They be showing love. I appreciate them so much. I add her and I'm like, yo, tell your husband, say sorry to quickly, bro. like it was starting to get personal for me.
Yeah, you wild for that. You wild for that, bro.
Because I'm like, yo, big dog, yo, you can't be doing this, bro. You can't be melting down like this, bro. Play ball, bro. Stop complaining to the refs. That's the first thing. When you start complaining to the refs, you got all these young players around you. They're going to start complaining to the refs. You start noticing RJ being a big-ass crybaby. Start complaining to him. Like, and it's certain things that he was doing that season where it's like, yo, big, is something happening behind the scenes that we don't know that you're so stressed? I agree with you. I seen him in post games. He did not – he didn't look as happy. Maybe it was the team. Maybe it was the teammates around him. Right, maybe he didn't have confidence in the teammates around him in order for them to win. Maybe it was certain coaching ways.
Right, didn't his coach leave that season? Because Woodson left, and then
Woodson left, and why his name can't come to my mind? Oh my god, talking about
his favorite coach.
Yes. Oh my god, I think he's at Louisville.
And yeah. Damn it. Kenny Payne.
Kenny Payne, yes. And, yo, Randle, what's that? Absolutely, brother.
You don't mind.
I want it. Nah, I want it right now. Randle, thank you, guys. I appreciate you. I love you. Randle, I don't know what happened the following offseason. Maybe it's just the Jalen Brunson sign, because that's what happened the following offseason.
That's exactly what it is.
Jalen Iverson, bro. I don't want to call him a top 10 player in Knicks history. I will say he's one of the most important Knicks players within the past 30 years to walk through Madison Square Garden.
Nah, I hear you. I'm with it.
And the reason why is because as soon as he came here, everybody's job is safe.
That's a fact.
And so talk to us about Jalen Brunson's first season here and how you felt about it and the whole trading Cam Reddish for Josh Hart and getting the Villanova boys and building that up and doing stuff of that nature.
Oh man. Okay, first I want to say I was probably one of the biggest Emmanuel Quickley fans in Knicks Nation before he was traded. At first, I thought Jalen Brunson was a good player for Dallas Mavericks. I never thought he was going to be this good. But me personally, I wanted to see Quickley get more run because I saw something. I was like, yo, I think he can be a guy. He can shoot the three. He can set people up. He can play defense. And I felt like bringing Jalen Brunson here would stifle that. So I wasn't the biggest fan of the move at the time. Not because I didn't like him as a player. I thought he was a solid player. But I just wanted to lean more into Emmanuel Quickley and E. Now, once he got here, and it got to like November or December, I was like, yo, wait a minute. I was on my channel wild, and I was like, future all-star Jalen Brunson, he's coming at you. I think it was the 76ers game that made me start thinking like, nah, this dude is real. And people was, shut up, Jay. Like, you don't know what you're talking. All-star, he ain't no all-star. I'm like, I'm telling you, dog. This dude is an all-star, and we're going to be hanging his number in the rafters in, like, years to come because he was clutch. He was a leader. He put Julius Randle back into his natural place. Everybody seemingly looked up to him. And he's averaging at that time. He was ramping up. He was averaging, like, 24 points a game. He was starting to ramp up. And this is his first season running a team and being the man. I'm just like, if this is what he's doing – and it's only been 3 months. This can be crazy. This can go somewhere. So I was talking crazy on the chat.
Yo, Jalen Brunson, his second preseason game. I said, oh yeah, this bird's cold. I said, I really knew it. And it's because of Jalen Brunson I soured on Devin Booker. Phoenix Suns versus Dallas Mavericks series. I watched every game because the Knicks was rumored to Jalen Brunson. So I'm like, all right, you know what? Let me really watch this guy and let me see if I could really vibe with this guy as my team's point guard. And I forgot which game it was, but I think Devin Booker scored over Brunson. I think he called him the B word. Like he looked at Brunson, called him the B word, and then Brunson looked right back at him. Like, and I'm looking at my TV. I'm like, all right, let me see what's going to happen. Let me see.
You got that dog.
Yo, the next 12 possessions, bro. Like, the next 12, I think everybody, he did not pass the ball. Like, the next 12 possessions, bro. Foul, midi, lay, foul, midi, three-pointer. And everything was off pick and roll. Like, he's calling for the screen. Wherever Booker's at, he's calling for the screen and he's getting the switch and he's doing the ISO. He's cooking Booker. He cooked Booker the rest of the plays. And watching him without Luka, I'm like, oh, okay. I was concerned about the contract because I'm like, he's 6'1". Like, I'm not giving him 6'1" point guard, 100 plus million. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That man is worth 400 million.
Nah, man, he's a max. He's a max.
And I nicknamed him Jalen Iverson because he has one of the best footwork I've ever seen. Me watching guys go. His footwork is crazy. His handle is crazy too.
Man, I'm about to call him Jalen Olajuwon because he be mixing dudes in the post, though. Like, shout out to Ebony. if you're a top 3 point guard in the paint, and you posting up dudes who are 6'6 and 6'7, you are different. You are different. Like, and everybody knows when it comes to playoff time, you need to get buckets. You need to have a go-to. And if you can get points in the paint consistently, it opens things up. And he can get that for you in the paint over taller players. That's a huge plus for us. This is why I don't buy that he's not a 1A nonsense. Because there's not... There aren't small point guards in the NBA who can cook you in the paint consistently. and do it at the high level he does, shooting over 50% and scoring 30 points a game. Like, that's crazy.
He's like an old school point guard. He really operates like inside out. Pause. But
that's a pause. Are we pausing that? Okay.
But he's a great close player, a great mid range jump shooter, a great 3-point shooter. Gets guys involved. His first season, I felt like it was spectacular. Do you think he had an effect on Julius Randle? And what do you think changed in Randle once Brunson got here? And what did you see, like, the whole team as a whole, as far as, like, the culture-wise changed when Brunson got here?
It put Randle in his natural position. Like, Randle is a talented player, but his personality is not that of a guy who should be looked at to lead a team. He's not the personality of a guy to lead the team, because you can't just lead the team with talent. You have to also lead the team with emotion. And people look to you to be emotionally even keeled or together to lead a team. And that's just not who he is. He's an emotional guy. He's invested in the game. So we can't look to him to be a leader of a team, but you can look to him to be a compliment, possibly. That could possibly be what his role is. So I feel like Jalen Brunson being here puts him back into his natural position as like a 2 or 3 guy. And it takes the pressure off of him. It just takes the pressure off of him to be looked at to score 30 a night consistently. Like, you can see the difference. Like, even with Jalen, even though we're not winning games right now, when Brunson, you see, we don't have OG, we don't have Randle, we don't have a consistent second scorer on the squad, and Brunson is still scoring 30 points a game, efficient shooting, still playing defense, and he hasn't missed a beat. As a matter of fact, his 3-point percentage might have dropped, but he's still efficient with no help. You put Randle in that same situation, it's not going to be that. It's not going to be that. So I think it just puts Randle back into his position as like a secondary guy, and it just takes the pressure off him, and it's just better for everybody, really.
What do you think getting Josh Hart do for the team as well? A guy who's won a college championship, a guy who's been on multiple teams, a guy who signed with the Knicks, who me, when this particular season started, I was criticizing him and getting at him because I was saying he's not aggressive enough. He needs to score the ball. Do you think he has any effect on the locker room with the Knicks and as far as like helping the culture is concerned when he got here?
Oh, yeah. First of all, those criticisms that you stated are still real. Like, I agree with you. I do feel like he needs to be aggressive, more aggressive sometimes. And he's been better because of that this in the second half of the season. But I feel like the acquisition of Josh Hart changed the trajectory of our team. It solidified our bench. I remember last year, shout out to my guy, Lee. That's my guy. We had this big argument over Tibbs and players. Like, I still remember we was arguing over the Knicks versus Bucks game. And the Knicks were up in the fourth quarter. The bench comes in versus the Bucks, and the bench lose the game. And he blamed Tibbs. I'm just like, Lee, we're too young. The Bucks is a championship team. We're not going to beat the Bucks with Miles McBride at that time being the lead point guard and a bunch of extra pieces. Josh Hart actually got us in a positive on the bench for the first time that season. We were actually net positive, even with his flaws. So I feel like him being a big energy guy, him being one of the best rebounders in the NBA at 6'4", him being able to get the rebound and go into fast break mode and get everybody easy buckets and himself easy buckets, I just felt like it changed the trajectory of the team, and it made us play faster, and it made us be able to even play a little bit more small ball, because he's a guard who plays like a big sometimes. So he changed our team, and he's probably one of the best role players in the NBA. And I feel like Leon just did a really good job getting elite role players on the Knicks.
Elite role player. Is Josh Hart, is he better than Derek Fisher?
He's not as, he is, that's an interesting question. Derek Fisher is a better shooter than Josh Hart. Derek Fisher has rings. Mm-hmm. So I usually tend to.
We're talking about the player. I'm just talking about strictly the player and his role.
Player.
Derek Fisher's a role player. Josh Hart is a role player. Who's the better player?
Damn. That's an interesting question. If it's funny, game on the line, I'd rather pass the ball to Derek Fisher.
Oh, absolutely.
No, not even a question. During the game, though, I might go with Josh Hart because he's going to do everything for you.
Who's better, Josh Hart or Lamar Odom?
Lamar Odom.
Who's better, Josh Hart or Sean Livingston?
Wow. Damn, say these questions. Livingston. Yo, I actually liked Livingston back in the day, yo.
I'm asking these questions because these are players that's been on championship teams. And if we're trying to win a championship, he has to be a better player than one of these guys or some of these guys.
You know what it is, though? It's like Livingston is a better – it's like it's weird because their roles are different. Like Livingston is more of a guard's guard. He's more of a guy who's a playmaker. Josh Hart is kind of growing into that, though. But you know what the thing is about – you know what the thing is? I would say Livingston by hair. But you know what the thing is, State? People aren't until they are. You know what I mean? So it's like people aren't great until they are great. When you're taking the steps to be great, no one can usually see it when you're taking the steps until you're there. So that's why sometimes I don't like the argument, well, he's won the ring and he hasn't. Because there was a point when Stephen Curry was looked at as some scrawny kid with bad ankles. And now people know him as the greatest shooter of all time. There was a time where I didn't want Steph Curry on my fantasy team because he was injured every year.
Woo! Steph, woo. I'm going to talk to the MSG about this because, woo!
But now he's the greatest. Now you'd be dumb not to put him on your team. You know what I'm saying? So people aren't great until they are.
Yo, that's a good segue because now we get to this season, and, you know, we lost in the playoffs. We lost in the second round to the Miami Heat. We bring in Big Paza, one of my favorites on the team, Dante DiVincenzo, fourth pick in Knicks history to hit 200-plus threes. Great shooter. I think one of the best shooters. So,
Lead role players.
He's one of the best league role players, yes. In Knicks history, though, from what I watch, he's one of the best shooters I've seen in Knicks history. Like, one of the best. Like, pure. Every time he shoots, I think it's going in. I love Steve Novak. I think Dante's a better shooter than
him. That's just without question. Steve Novak was limited. He was limited, and he can't move. You can run him off the line. He can't do anything after that.
How do you think now getting Dante DiVincenzo having to move Grimes, we traded Grimes, right? And we're getting into this season, right? We traded Grimes. We traded all the kids. We traded my young boy, RJ Barrett. That shit broke my heart.
Yeah.
That broke my heart. I was in Ghana when they traded RJ.
I know.
I was so hurt, bro.
I know.
I couldn't even react to it. They traded my young boy quickly.
That was me with quickly, bro. But I mean, I understood it though. I liked OG, so I got it. It hurt though, but.
And we get OG and Anobi. We get Precious. We got iHeart, the big German. Shouts to my guy iHeart. with Dante DiVincenzo. And now you see this nucleus this season, and you're seeing what they're doing together. You're seeing how Tibbs is coaching through adversity, having multiple injuries throughout the season, having to plug and play guys, having to play eight guys some nights, having to play 10 guys some nights, having to start do some games, having to start quickly some games, having to start just going everywhere with it. Has Tibbs officially changed the culture now that we passed those first like couple of years? You think the culture has officially changed? And what are you seeing from the outside looking in that, you know, can prove your point?
I think Tibbs has changed the culture. I think it started when he got here. I think he changed the culture as soon as he started to be the coach of the Knicks, because he gave the Knicks a structure. He went from Fizdale, who was kind of a freelancer, kind of do what you feel. And he gives you all these fancy metaphors. Here, here's a log. And this log represents us, and this axe represents the work, and we got to chop down the tree. He gives you all this bull and not actually give you like any actual instructions. And Tom Thibodeau is like, these are the fundamentals, master this, and then we'll grow from there. So I feel like as soon as Tom Thibodeau came here, he already set the culture. Now, what I think people underestimate is Tom Thibodeau grew with the team. Like, he grew as a coach over the years in the New York Knicks uniform. And what the thing with growth is, when you first start to grow, not everybody sees it at first, because you don't grow, you don't take big steps and you grow. You take a small step and a small step and a small step and a small step. And then what happens is you look back and you're like, oh wow, I'm 20 steps in. So I feel like the growth was going under the radar. But I feel like Tibbs actually grew with the team, and he changed the culture. And that's when you start to realize, look at that. Look at where Bride is now versus then. He's grown. Look at where Quickly was then, when people said he should be traded. Then when people was crying when he was getting, when he got traded to the Raptors. He's developing players. He's developing culture. And I think it might be hard for people to admit, but he was right on some of the players that he didn't like. Even like
examples. So, please.
I think he absolutely changed the culture for sure.
Well, no, when I say examples, who was the players he was right on?
Who was the players he wasn't right on? He was right on. Now, Okay. Obi and Cam, to me, are like the biggest. You know what? We were tripping, right? Now, did I like the way with the Cam situation though? I always have an asterisk with that situation, because I still feel like, even though Tibbs was right, I feel like he did him a little bit dirty. And I didn't like the way he did it, even though he was right. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the way I see it. Because I didn't like how, when we were injured and we only had like six players, he would look at the end of the bench and still not play Cam. Like, that to me was crazy. But at the end of the day, he was right. And then for Obi, he wasn't giving Obi any real burn. He only gave him 15 to 20 minutes a game. He gets traded to Indiana. Obi's in the starter minutes. And then the second half of the season, he goes to the bench and he's playing 15 to 20 minutes a game. And he had all the runaway and all the opportunity. So, what can you say at that point?
I mean, I take the L on that one. Publicly, I say that now. 393 people tuning in. I appreciate all of you guys who's tuning in, by the way. I did that. You know what it was with Obi Toppin? I used to give my Obi Toppin takes out of devotion instead of thinking about it from a basketball standpoint. You know what I'm saying? So I used to say stuff like, get Randall off the team so we could start Obi.
Oh, I knew. Yeah, it was more about Randall than Obi.
And when you say stuff like that, but then Obi goes to a new team, he gets benched. It's like...
for not all star this time. It's
just like, I don't want to look like an 8-0. Oh, God, excuse me. I don't want to look like an a-hole or nothing, but yeah, I was wrong, man. But, you know, how do you feel about the Knicks, like, trading all of the kids as far as, like, direction is concerned? Because with this season, that actually happened. The only kid that's left, only two kids that's left that have been here for years is Deuce McBride and my guy, Mitch Robinson, who I've been fighting for years.
Dinosaur, yo.
Yep. Sheesh. And how do you feel about the Knicks picking a direction finally? Because the direction before was kind of confusing. Do you want to build and develop? Do you want to drive? Do you want to win now? Do you want to build the vets and this, that, and third? So now that the Knicks chose the direction with the goddamn vets and said, all right, we're going to go with the vets. How you feel about their direction right now?
I feel good about it because, listen, man, the moment Jalen Brunson became a New York Knick, the timeline changed to me because I'm looking at Jalen Brunson. He's in his prime. He's dropping 24, 25, now 30 a game on fish. He's efficient. You got to take advantage of a guy who's 6 feet tall in his prime, who gets beat up a lot. You got to take advantage of that. So it hurts to trade away our young guys because they were that sign of hope for us. They were this first sign of, you know what, we're building the right way. We have a youthful team that can grow together. And we watch these guys grow from, you know, being a rookie to what they are now. So it hurt to see them leave. But when you take the emotions out of it, it was the right basketball move. It was the right basketball move to get one of the best defensive wings in OG Anunoby in the NBA to be here. You know what I mean? It was the right basketball move to keep Randall over Obi. It was the right basketball move to do these things. And you just, at this time, even though it hurts, it'll hurt a lot less if we win a chip. I'll be crying in the parade for a different reason. You know what I'm saying?
Yo. So that leads me to this. Is it finals a bust from now on under Tom Thibodeau? Pause. Under Tom Thibodeau and Leon Rose? Because you traded all the kids.
Mm-hmm.
All of them is gone. You have vets now. So you must win a championship with Tom Thibodeau and Leon Rose for you to justify all of your moves since 2019. Am I wrong for feeling that way, Jay?
I feel like it's too early for bust, but we are building a contending team. So I think final bust is too extreme in my opinion. I do believe that we have championship aspirations for sure. I do believe that we can sneak up on some teams, but I still feel like there is a human element. There is a natural, we have to let things cook element to kind of get to where we have to go. So even though like we might have the right pieces now, I still feel like the real finals or bust element comes around in probably like 2 or 3 years, in my opinion. But I feel whoa, we knocking on the door.
So we giving Leon Rose another 3 years to build a championship roster?
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely. What? I'll be 37. Absolutely not, Jack. Absolutely, no.
For sure. Hey, man, stay.
Yeah, man.
It's hard. I know people think that everything is out of order and you win the shit, but that's just not how the NBA works, man. It's not how, like, look at the Denver Nuggets. and Jokic and how long he's been there and how long they've been knocking on the door before they actually won a chip. Like, it takes some time to get the pieces, to get not even just the pieces, but be healthy. You know what I mean? To be healthy and be here at the right time. Because I feel like this was 1 year Jamal, well, Murray was kind of injured and they didn't get past I forgot what round because he was injured. And now everybody's healthy and now they won the chip. So I know it might look like on paper that we got the pieces to do it right there this year. And I'd be so, but there is, like, the NBA is tough. You don't see teams repeating like back in the day. Like, you don't see Spurs and Golden State teams repeating year after year after year like back in the day. So that's why I can't say this championship a bust. Like, we're knocking on the door, we contending. If we are healthy, get to the Eastern Conference Finals, we have to be in that range.
Okay. Maybe I am a little extreme, right? Shout out to my guy Nick and Nader. Jay Ellis, tell that man he wrong in that stat. He just did.
Shout out to my guy Nick and Nader, man. I told him I just broke it down into examples.
Okay. For me, it's it doesn't take you 5-6 years to build a championship contender. Given what Steve Mills left him, he left you all your first round picks, left you a young 20-year-old RJ Barrett, left you a young 25-year-old Julius Randle. You should be a championship contender now. Yeah, you got all your firsts. It should be no excuses. You should be able to get to the finals this season, or I feel like this season would be a failure for me.
I'm here to remind you guys that this is y'all stance every year, no matter.
No, it's never been my stance.
Stay. Okay. Let's be real. Okay. When the Knicks lost to the Miami Heat last year, everybody thought Tibbs should be fired and there should be no excuses. And there's no way we should be. No one even expected us to be in the second round. But once we got to the second round, it was Leon Rose is trash. He don't know what he's doing. How dare he? He don't have the pieces. We should be further along. That's the stance every year, no matter what the circumstances year to year. Y'all don't nuance the thing and look at what's happening year to year. Y'all just have blanket statements. Everything is not black and white blanket statements. Last year, we were too young. We had eight guys under 25 when the average NBA championship winner is like, 28, 29, and our guys are 25. And y'all are pissed at Tibbs that we couldn't win a championship with an injured Julius Randle and Obi Toppin, who thought was a starter, who is now a bench player on the end, and some pieces. Like, we have to look at things realistically and not just knee jerk. We have to win every year championship of us. This championship was for us every year, it seems like.
It's just for me, like, once you trade all the kids and you signify that, you know, you're building with vets, you're telling me that you feel like you're a championship contender. So since you feel like you're a championship contender, I feel like I have to treat you like a championship contender. So
that's emotion.
That's emotion.
There's a lot of vets. There's a lot of teams who are just vets. That doesn't mean every team is a championship contender.
Okay. Okay. That's understandable. All I'm saying is, you know, the Knicks, we've been on a long drop, right? And this drought has been, 51 years, 52 years now going on. Mm-hmm. And this team specifically is probably the best team that I've watched within the past 20 years, the best Knicks mm-hmm. team collectively. And I feel like we have a chance. 76ers, we beat the hell out of them multiple times. We beat them so bad last game, I believe it was last game we played them. We beat them so bad that I turned off the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. Like, it was just so disingenuous to watch that beat down. We beat the hell out of the Milwaukee Bucks. Mm-hmm. We beat the hell out of a lot of these teams. That's why I'm on my championship of us. I just want to make sure that I always have this team being held accountable. Like, that's feel like they gotta be held accountable, bro. They gotta be held accountable, and you know.
I hear there's accountability element and there is a human element, right? Like there's factors that you have to think about when you're talking about championship of us. So like for me, health is a big, big thing for us. Randall specifically, we're not going anywhere without Randall. Randall is a rhythm player. I was telling Lee and other people, Randall to me is my biggest concern because we all saw how he started at the beginning of the season. When he was coming off of surgery, he looked like trash for like a week and a half. Everybody was wanting to trade the dude. And then he got into rhythm. And then it was like he's a different player. When he came, we forget he came back into the playoffs out of rhythm. Playing, and you're supposed to be playing at the highest level you can possibly can play at. So I have to see him come back healthy, in rhythm, going into the playoffs, and have those pieces gel together. And be like, all right, this is the team. Let's go. Like I have to see certain things happen and click the way it's supposed to.
When it comes to Randall, you know, I just want to get to these last like four guys, and then I'm gonna let you get out of here. I know it's Saturday. I know you got stuff to do. Thank you already. It took like an hour and 12 to get me. I'm so sorry, but thank you for your time so much. When it comes to Randall specifically, if you give us civil rights numbers in the playoffs, who are we blaming, bro? Who's getting the? Are we blaming Randall? Are we blaming Tibbs? Who are we blaming if he, he minimum 100 attempts. I think he has the worst field goal percentage in playoff
history. I agree.
So do we get at him or do we give him another pass and say, you know what, he was hurt this year?
It depends.
Just like playoff runs.
It depends on, like, it depends. For me, this is how I'm judging it. He comes back healthy. He comes back, right? If he's going into the playoffs in rhythm, and I'm like, oh, this is the Julius Randle I remember, and then the playoff starts, and he's putting up, as you call it, the civil rights numbers, then we have to look at that and go, is this the real second guy? Or do we have to move on and find another second guy? But if he comes back, and I'm like, damn, he's back on the Knicks team, he's not in rhythm yet, and then he has to try still getting rhythm in the playoffs, then I have to look at that differently. And go, damn, he's in the playoffs again, not in rhythm again. How do I judge this now? That's the way I see it.
Mm-hmm. Mitchell Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein. Who you picking? Because in my opinion, I don't think you could keep both. It's just my opinion. I think Isaiah Hartenstein has outpriced himself. So about 15 million. It's pointless to pay two centers 15 million. You got 30 million. You could just draft.
Motion detector.
Who you pick? With the understanding that we have iHeart's cap hold, we do have his bird rights, but we also got to talk about this next guy who we haven't really spoken about. Who we're gonna get to in OG and Anobi, but you know we got to pay OG and Anobi. So I had a Mitch Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein. Depending on what happens in the playoffs, for me, it's who I'm keeping. But who would you keep and why? And what would you do with the other center?
This is tough, too, because I might be leaning more towards Mitch. But this is the thing with Hartenstein that I don't think people might realize. Because people are concerned with Mitch's injury history, and they're overlooking Hartenstein's injury history. When Hartenstein first came to the Knicks, he was playing like doo-doo. And I was sitting here like, this is the guy that was supposed to be the stretch five, that was going to be the defender blocking shots. Is this the guy? And he got into rhythm more towards the end of the season. Why? Because he had Achilles injury. It didn't come out till later that he had an Achilles injury, and that's what affected his play. So people are like, a lot of people are like, get rid of Mitch because he's injury prone. As soon as Hartenstein started playing Mitch minutes, he got injured. So I kind of feel like it's really you flipping a dice at this point. You're flipping a coin at this point. I'm sorry, wrong analogy. Because both of those guys kind of show tendencies of, man, when if you play them 20, 30 minutes a game, you're going to be in the same situation, both of them. One is going to be, I'm missing all my Achilles, and I'm going to be playing like bad for a while. The other one's going to be, I might be out for 2 months, and then I got to bring him back. So I might lean towards Mitch only because we were the top defense in the league when he was playing, and it dropped when iHeart was playing, but I felt like it came back to top 10 when OG was added with iHeart. So I might edge Mitch because I feel like we can still be a top 10 defensive team with Mitch. I'm not sure if you can do it with iHeart or not, but that's what I'm basing my answer off of.
So basically,
front door.
How can I put this?
But it's close.
you're signing trade iHeart. And you're keeping Mitchell Robinson, or you'll just let iHeart walk?
Oh no, nobody's walking. If I had a gun to my head, I guess sign and trade iHeart. But it's really close, man. I can really go either way, to be honest.
So then, what would you pay Precious?
Motion.
Because we can't let everybody walk. We got to keep two of these guys, right? So What would you do with Precious? Or is you re-signing Precious like I would, and I would re-sign Precious to a, I don't believe we can offer him this, but I will do my Carfax when I get a chance to get on my laptop. I would pay Precious like a 4-year, $40 million, like 3-year, $40 million. I think he's worth the money. I think he's really good too. I'm not gonna lie, but what would you do with Precious after you do this initial move? Okay, you kept Mitchell Robinson. iHeart is gone. So what are you doing with Precious?
I would sign him for around that part. I feel like that's kind of what iHeart is getting now, I believe, probably. I'm not sure if that works with the cap either. But that might be, I mean, that could be it. That could be the number because I don't expect Alec Burks to be here. So there'll probably be some space there when Alec Burks comes off the books. So that number might be a decent number for Precious.
So leaning right into the next guy, OG Anunoby. How much you paying OG Anunoby? I think he's worth, me personally, I think he's worth about $30 million per season. But the only thing that scares me, he's always hurt, man.
Yeah.
Never played 75. I don't think he's ever played 75 games in the NBA season. He fits what we do, got the highest plus minus in Knicks history for a player who started with the Knicks his first about 7 games or whatnot. Before he got hurt, I believe he played 7 games, 40 plus minutes or more. Great shooter, take it to the basket, very efficient, great defender, guards 1 through 5. I love the fact that one game Tibbs had him guarding Joel Embiid. You could play him at the 2, 3, 4. So what are you doing with OG Anunoby? How much you're paying him? Also, when do you think OG Anunoby will come back from injury?
I feel like he might be back next game, to be honest with you. He was practicing already. He was doing 5-on-5. So I feel like he'll be back next game versus 76ers. And I think that's a good game for him to come back, depleted 76ers team, get into rhythm, and kind of do your thing there. But I agree with your number. Around 30 mil should be sufficient for a starter. I think he wants 40 mil, but I also read that he could give a discount for the right team, and I feel like we might be that right team, and I think the Knicks did their due diligence knowing that. So I think around 30, 35 or so, somewhere around there would be good. Even if it is a 40, I'll do I call it the Scott Perry special, where you do like 1 year overpay and then you decline the contract. So you only hit your books for 1 year, and then you can, you know what I'm saying? Maybe it's something like that. But I'm good with 30 mil.
Okay. That's great. All right, last two questions, and I'm going to get you out of here, my guy, Jay. Once again, man, I appreciate you for coming up to the podcast, man. This means a lot to me, man. I appreciate you, man. I also appreciate the chat, man. Shout out to Brutus, man, putting the line up saying, Brutus, this is not the NBA trade machine on YouTube. Brutus, stop the nonsense, okay? It's kind of OG. We only have iHeart's early bird rights date. Oh, that's not good. Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, somebody else can come in and.
Yeah.
But, like, the thing is, he's injured. Like, somebody else watching him might be thinking the same thing we are.
Okay.
Like, he started off playing really great, but he hasn't been to iHeart for a month. You know what I mean? So for a team to offer him something, it'll probably have to be a young team with cap space who might be desperate to plug a hole. Mm. That's the way I see it.
Okay. Okay. My second to last question. Let me get this out the way early. It's probably one of Leon Rose's worst moves in his tenure here. I hate Alec Burks, bro. I can't fucking stand this guy. I don't like him on the team. I don't like the way he dribbles the basketball. I don't like the way he walks. I don't like his face. I don't like his hairline. I don't like the way he look. Alec Burks in the first 10 games with the New York Knicks, I think he's the first player in like NBA history to go on his new team and shoot under 33% from the field, under 30% from three, under 65% from the free throw line. His plus minus is dog water. And Bojan, love Bojan, the Croatian brother, love him. They both stink. They stink different ways. Bojan can score. He doesn't hog the ball. He doesn't do none of the extra. His defense terrible. He's a cone out there. Alec Burks is Casper. I don't know what. And Deuce, the guy you mentioned earlier, who was kept out of all of the trades, one of our kids that we drafted, who just signed this year for $13 million. He's outshining them both, shooting 40% from three this season, I believe. How do you feel about this trade with Alec Burks and Bojan? Do you think we'll be able to flip Bojan later on in a trade for an all-star? Because that should be the idea that the Knicks is giving
off.
That's
exactly why they got him anyway. Yeah.
So do you think they're going to be able to make that trade? And then who do you feel like should get less minutes out of the three with Burks, Bojan, and Deuce McBride?
Burks. That's not even that's not even a question. Burks. I'm not gonna hold you. So I have, whenever anybody most mentioned Bojan Bogdanovic to the Knicks, I turned my nose up. I did. I really did. I was just like, he can't play defense. Everybody's like, he can shoot. He can shoot. He can shoot. I was like, but he can't play defense at all. Like, even the games where he lit us up, we just targeted him. I remember that vividly. We just targeted him wherever he was. Oh, you over here? You guarding that guy? Bring that guy over here. Pick and roll. Pick, switch, ISO. That's all we did. Now, when the situation happened with OG Anunoby and Julius Randle went down and we got him, I was actually happy because I'm like, I was scared. I was like, dog, where is the scoring going to come from? Where is the scoring going to come from? And I also, Alec Burks to me was balling at the time. He was shooting over 40% from three from Detroit. He was dropping 30 points a game. So I'm like, I was actually happy when the trade happened. I was like, you know what? I wasn't really a Bojan guy, but we need the scoring. Cool. Alec Burks actually felt like he played well for the Knicks, even though I didn't like the way Tibbs was using him personally. Like, I felt like Tibbs overused him as a point guard, and I felt like Emmanuel quickly deserved more minutes than him, but I didn't feel like he was actually playing bad. I was more mad at Tibbs than Alec Burks at the time. So at the time when the trade happened, I was cool with it. But now seeing it, I'm just like, man, I do not like what I'm seeing from Alec Burks. And it would be one thing if he was chucking and making shots, but he's not making shots. And we got those guys here to supplement the scoring while we bring our guys back healthy. And they're not doing that. So to me, they're severely underperforming.
He ain't make shots his first damn time here. He shot under 40%. Yo, what are we
doing? He was shooting over 40% from three, and he was shooting well in the fourth quarter when Tibbs was here. Like, he was.
Yeah.
He was. He was shooting under 40% from the field, but he was shooting over 40% from three. And he was he was shooting well in the fourth quarter. So his first thing with the Knicks.
True.
So that's what I was basing it off of.
Okay. The Bojan part, because we know Alec Burks, free agents this summer. The Knicks, they bet y'all better not bring them Burks to work out there.
He's gone.
But Bojan is still on the books for, I believe, $22 million. Yeah. Do you think the Knicks will be able to get an all-star for Bojan? So the trade will have to be, and we're just thinking about the guys who's already on the roster. We're not talking about none else. The trade will have to be Bojan, either Mitchell Robinson or Josh Harden, one of the Villanova guys. We know none of the Villanova guys is going nowhere. And four first-round picks. Do you think that's enough to pry a current team all-star from their team?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it depends on what they value. If they're a rebuilding team, usually they value picks. Usually. So it depends on what their value is. Some teams value picks, some teams value players, some teams value kind of mix of both. But when you have I feel like six or seven first round picks, you kind of at least have to listen.
Yeah, well, this leads into my last question. Realistic option that the Knicks could get within the next 3-4 years. If there was one player in the NBA you would want these guys to trade for, and you'll be comfortable giving up four to five first round picks, and four of them unprotected. Because you're going to have to shoot for the stars at least one time. Mm-hmm. Is there one player, realistically, that you would give that up for?
Realistic? This is the thing about this, man. This flaws of all these players, bro. Like, dead ass. Like, I don't like any of the fits with any of the superstars. Like, I hate the idea of having Cat here. I know Donovan Mitchell is the hot name. I don't like the idea of pairing Donovan Mitchell with Jalen Brunson, even though he's the most realistic. I just don't like it. I don't like any of that. Like, Mikal Bridges is somebody I would actually love here, but Brooklyn is annoying. They ain't gonna try to trade him to us. You know what I mean? Like, this to me, there's no real clean fit, to be honest with you. The thing that I think about most that might be realistic, but it still might be weird, is Devin Booker, because at least he's a shooting guard who can kind of play make, he's not going to be deficient on defense with under Tibbs, tall enough to kind of be next to Jalen Brunson. That's the name that comes to me. But even him, like, his money is, he's hurt a lot for a young guy, like a lot. But when it comes to fit and realisticness, like, I don't know what's going to happen with the Phoenix Suns team, because they're so weirdly built. But that's the name that I kind of think of that might make sense. But to me, that's still not like a clean fit. But it's the cleanest I can think of.
Yo, man, I hate Devin Booker's guts, bro. Like,
Devin Booker and Jalen Brunson being on the same team after that playoffs is crazy, too.
Yeah, like, I don't know. It's just, like, he nice. Don't get me wrong. Like, he nice, but, like, I don't know. Like, maybe because of the era of shooting guards that I grew up with, it's just I've been spoiled. Got Allen Iverson, Ray Allen, Brandon Roy, Kobe Bryant. Like, it's like I'm around greatness of shooting guards. I'm like, that's what he pulled in the finals versus the Milwaukee Bucks. And granted, like, I think he still averaged, like, 26, 27 in those finals. It didn't feel impactful at all, bro. Like, at all. So, like, Devin Booker.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you got Jalen Brunson. Because I, whatever you say, I still believe in the clutchness of Jalen Brunson. I do feel like a little power struggle, though. I'm not going to hold you. Mm. I can see a power struggle between Devin Booker and Jalen Brunson being on the scene.
Oh, nah, because we'll kick Devin Booker out of New York. Nobody come in. It's Brunson's team. Anybody who come in, you You better be Luka level.
Maybe Luka. Yeah, maybe. Actually, I could see Luka happening.
Yeah, but Luka. Mark Cuban would rather drink dog piss than trade the next Luka, bro.
we ain't.
I would.
Yeah, he might be right about that. But man, the way the Dallas Mavericks are doing, man, they. How long does Luka really have there? Well, I feel like they're gonna just keep falling short. And make tank again. And Luka wants to compete. So I don't know. That's something to look at too. Even though Luka and Brunson together is still a weird fit defensively, but Luka's is Luka. So we just gotta throw that out the window. As long as OG is here, you gotta keep OG next to them. And you gotta have a defensive presence in the center for sure.
Sure, man. Woo. This is a good conversation, Jay. I want to respect your time. And you said hour and a half. I want to make sure I want to get the whole hour and a half out the way.
You got another question?
Not right now. Not currently, but I know that we're gonna get up again. This is gonna be I had a great time. I learned a lot too. From you just even talking, how you run stuff in. You know, the chat, shout outs to the chat, man. Shout out to all you guys, shout out to the 578 people that's in it right now. Appreciate you guys.
It's on Twitter. I'm not even on the chat and
looking. Oh yeah, it's on Twitter, my Facebook, YouTube, everything.
Got you. Salute to all the chats.
So I'm gonna let you get out of here. What you got working on? Plug your show. Once again, man, thank you so much for joining me today on this pod, man. I had a lot of fun, man. We definitely gonna do this again. We're gonna try to get up during the playoffs. And you know, shouts to KLT, shouts to the whole KLT team. I appreciate you guys. I love you guys, man. Yeah, man. It's your turn, Jay.
Yeah, appreciate you. Appreciate the love and the support, early support, yo. Like, dude, one of the few people who actually listen to our SoundCloud stuff, so shout out to you. But you can follow us on the Nick of Time Show on YouTube. We do post games after every game. And I do that with Lee Escobedo, Ryan G, and Mad Knicks fan, a.k.a. Ebony. Ooh, man, I love Ebony. Ebony is so dope. but definitely follow us there. Also at the KLT Show on Twitter, the Nick of Time Show on Instagram and Facebook as well. And yeah, also hopefully we should bring back the Nick Tac Toe Show, where we do like a Nick trivia show, where we ask fans to come on and you face other fans and test your Nick trivia. We're gonna bring that back, so definitely look out for that. And just, you know, tap in, go to our YouTube channel and join us and watch our post games and watch our lively debates. And yeah, man, salute. Thank you for having me today, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you, man. Thank you once again, man. I'll let you get out of here, man. Thank you once again, Jay, man. Appreciate you, man. One of the fathers with Nick's content creation. You guys have to show love, show appreciation to people like KLT, man, Nick of Time Show, man. These people have been up here longer than me. I've been doing it for about, I think, 6-7 years. You guys have been so decade.
That's crazy, man.
Yes, time is flying. So, like, Jay, once again, man, I appreciate you. I'm gonna get you out of here real quick, and I'm gonna thank you once again, Jay. Appreciate you once again, bro. Appreciate
you.
Peace, bro. And yo, man, that was a great show, man. Shout out to my guy Jay Ellis, man. That was a good show, man. Shout out to my pops too, man. He right behind me. Oh, wrong hand. But my pops is right over there. And he passed away 3 days, no, 2 days this year, after my 34th birthday. And my very first live stream, my pops was actually here in the liquor store. And I remember he came to the back, and he just said to me, hey, son, what you doing? I'm like, yo, I'm doing a live stream. He's like, oh, I like what you're doing, man. I'm proud of you. Thank you. I like what you're doing. He just goes back to the front. And I was probably like the first time, like a long time, a minute. I don't know. Because I know my father, he listens to stuff that I used to do and look at it from afar. But that was like the first time, bro. The first time my pops gave me that affirmation, like, yeah, I see what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. It's going to take you somewhere far. So once again, man, today, it's a good day. It's a great day. Because this is not the only pot that's going to be happening today. The Tyson coming through. Anthony MSG coming through. Probably like, you know, an hour and a half or so, 45 minutes. I also got my guy. I think my guy Jay from the East. My guy Jay. Nick Podcaster. My young guy, well, not even young, that's my guy, though. He young inside of Nick's concert creation. He gonna pull up, too. So I appreciate all of you people, everybody pulled up today. Love you, God. And shout out to you, cuz I appreciate Cuzzo, man. He does wonders. He does wonders. Thank you, sir. I don't need no hot sauce, sir.
Okay, you can put it
there. Thank you, sir. Oh, man. All right, man. Yeah, man. Salute to everybody, man. Salute to the chat, man. Salute to my God. Yeah, look, man. Wonderful show today. Wonderful show today. Well, I'll be right back in about an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes. I'm going to have Anthony MSG. He pulling up the Harlem, baby, right to Fred Wines and Liquor. And we're going to talk some Knicks basketball, but we're also going to talk Italian heritage, man. I really got a whole, like, I had a list for my guy, Jay Ellis, right? And I had a whole list of questions I wanted to ask. I got a whole list of questions for Anthony MSG. And shout out to my guy, Jay Ellis. He answered the question about, you know, what is good advice would you give for content creation and the next Nick podcast if we want to do content. And that was great advice that my guy, Jay Ellis gave. But, you know, with Anthony MSG, I want to get into like Italian heritage, and Italian food. He bringing pastries and all this other shit that I ain't never eaten before. So shout out to Anthony MSG, man. Shout out to the New York Knicks fan. Shout out to my guy Smooth, man. That's my brother, man. Cat, man. Dope content, man. Yo, I'm trying, bro. Not even I'm trying. I'm doing it. I just gotta keep going, all right? I just gotta keep going. Shout out to my guy OBSB, my guy Rico, man. This was a nice hat, nice Dapper Dan hat, man. Nice Dapper Dan. You see the Unseen right on the arm sleeves. And I got on the Unseen. Nice little thermal on. Shout out to my guy Mike, man. Unseen, man. Helps me with a lot, man. My guy Mike, yeah, that's my guy. That's my dog. Shout out to Foster Projects, man. Mike, that's my dog. Shout out to my cousin DP. Mike, that's my dog, man. If you ever have Unseen on, that's for Mike. That's 115th and Bang Bang. Well, Lennox Avenue, if you're not from. Thank y'all once again. Let me get out of here. Let me, you know, because I got to mentally reset. Get ready for Anthony MSG. So appreciate y'all once again for joining me in State of the New York Knicks podcast. And my guy, Jay Ellis in the building, Nick of Time Show. Love all of you guys, man. I appreciate all of you guys, man. Shout out, salute to all Knicks fans. All of you guys, man. Y'all special to me, man. Once again, I'm out of here. Peace out, man. It's your boy, State.